good morning and welcome to the panel for this Tuesday, the 15th of July. I'm Joe Donahue. It is a pleasure to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning, Joseph.
And good morning to our political consultant, Libby Post. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe.
And we welcome to the panel for the first time. He has been on the show on the roundtable since its inception, but it's his first time on the panel. So we welcome to the program Rich Honan, partner in charge of the Albany office of Phillips Lytle LLP, a corporate lawyer. You fit in perfectly, my friend. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I will try and keep up.
It's good to have you with us.
It's early in the morning.
Huh? Yeah, that's right. So we welcome a newbie to our group, and it's very fun. Let's go to the topics at hand. And we would like to begin with, we'll get Rich.
Can I just interrupt for
ahead.
A second
sure,
note with great sadness the passing of James McGregor Burns, who
is
one of the top political scientists and historians in the country, a good friend of this radio station, has been on a lot, and is in his, you know, I think he's 95 years old.
Yeah, 95.
And a wonderful, wonderful, kind man who is everything that a professor should be. You know, he was an elitist. He didn't talk down to anybody. If he couldn't make his case talking to you, looking you in the eye, you know, he was just, he wouldn't do it. He was just a wonderful guy. And I have to say, everybody in the academy should take lessons from him and how this is done, because he was a great asset for Williams College. You say Williams College and people will tell you James McGregor Burns.
Yeah.
Just great.
And his background is incredible. I mean, what he accomplished with the Kennedy administration.
His books and his you know, his work on Kennedy. And you know what? One of the things I loved about the guy was that he ran for Congress against a very popular congressman, Silvio Conti, who was a Republican congressman for a long time and had that seat until he, you know, passed. He was a wonderful guy. And Silvio Conti, he gave him a tough race. There were people who used the McCarthyistic tactics against them. But, you know, he never lost his sense of humor. He never lost his decency. Great guy.
What would his position have been on this Citibank thing that we're talking about, just on the whole idea of kind of bringing the banks to justice?
Beats me.
But that's an interesting question.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was a reformer. There's no question.
Okay.
And so I think we could pretty well project what he would have been saying, that the banks should be behaving themselves.
A $7 billion deal that Citigroup agreed to strike with the Justice Department involves one of the largest cash penalties ever paid to settle a federal inquiry into a bank suspected of mortgage misdeeds. But another major component of the settlement has little to do with troubled mortgages. As part of the deal, Citigroup has also agreed to provide $180 million in financing to build affordable rental housing. The unusual agreement, which was outlined in the deal on Monday, underscores how difficult it remains for Citigroup to shed its rocky past and how federal prosecutors are getting creative in holding the nation's big banks accountable for losses that crippled the global financial market system in 2008. Rich, what do you think?
Well, I think it's notable from a corporate standpoint that you could pay a $4 billion, the penalty was $4 billion, to pay that in a quarter and still show profits of $181 million after paying the fine. You know, you're talking about a bank that does between $19 and $20 billion in revenue per quarter.
Put another way, a $5 tip for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. and it kind of harkens back to the days when Elliot Spitzer was Attorney General,
and going
after them with a lot of sound and fury, but at the end of the day, they paid their fine. The Merrill Lynches of the world paid their fine,
and
then
Spitzer
went
off. Is no more. I mean, as a governor, and you know, they went after him with everything they had. Too bad that he helped them, but the fact of the matter was that he was a great governor and a reformist governor, and they did their best to get him, and they were unashamed about that. There was a film called Client Number 9. And they showed these guys bragging about having gone
Spitzer. That's right. You know, what's interesting to me is that they wanted to start a lot lower, and the government held firm, which is great, but there are still so many people out there who are holding the bag because they had to go under. Yeah. They lost their homes.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but it's a little too late.
And also, I mean, the actual charge here was not on the mortgages. This was for deception in selling after the mortgages had been given and they were made into mortgage-backed securities. Then they said they misrepresented the value of the security. So really, mm-hmm. the people who were hurt there were, you know, the big institutional investors. This doesn't really kind of trickle down very well.
So we can't feel too bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't feel bad about it. I feel good about it. Mm-hmm. I think anything that brings these guys were too big to fail. We all knew that. Anything that, you know, brings some light onto this, but it took a long time to get here. Don't you think, Rich?
I think so. And Alan, I guess I would ask you, I understand Dodd-Frank. I mean, to the extent you can understand, you know, any federal legislation, but I don't understand where the preventative aspect is. I understand. In other words, what's going to make this not happen again, whether it's Citibank or...
Well, that's what watchdog groups are saying, mm-hmm. that they haven't held the banks accountable and that, mm-hmm. that none of the executives have been criminally charged for the mortgage problems.
Yeah. Look, there are a lot of people who think, I was going to say that, a lot of people think that some of these bankers deserve to be behind bars, you know, for what they did, and that if you stole a loaf of bread or something like that, or held up a bodega, you would have been behind bars, but this was really bad, and we know that we haven't done what we should have.
Yeah, and I think that decision on criminal versus civil, I think that was a decision that the Department of Justice, they kind of have a SWAT team on these banks, and they made that decision several years ago to proceed under FIREA, the Financial Institutions Reform, Recovery, Enforcement Act, which is from the old SNL crisis, the old savings and loan crisis. And I think, Alan, one of the reasons they made that decision was to forego the criminal prosecutions, because when you proceed civilly, you can go by a preponderance of the evidence. You don't have to show anything beyond a reasonable doubt. And it's just an easier standard of proof. And I think that's why these banks are ponying up, you know, billions of dollars. You're right, Libby, when they wanted to pay a couple hundred million.
Right.
I like that the government didn't even respond.
Yes, yeah.
Didn't even counter.
Well, you know, the Justice Department and the president, I'm sure, knew that part of their legacy was going to be whether they had done anything on this at all.
You know, but it's, I get the civil versus criminal, but for the little person out there, the little guy out there who is struggling every day to see these guys not get off, you know, to get off and not go to jail, it just reinforces their lack of faith in government.
It's why half the people don't vote.
Yeah. I mean, it really does. Because the big rich white men who run these banks got off scot-free from ripping everybody off.
Yeah, I think that's. I think that analysis.
A little bit of a generalization,
it's a little,
perhaps?
Yeah, it's a little bit, especially because.
So according to Henry,
and I think I would make the distinction between. I mean, here, the charge here was that they basically ripped off their investors, which is bad enough. But their investors are also those rich white men. I think I would agree with you to the extent that the charges were, you know, the fraudulent mortgages. You know, in other words, we say, you know, you go to somebody who maybe doesn't have a lot of education and we tell you it's going to be a fixed rate. But guess what? It's really not variable. Right. And there's all these in fees. I mean, then I think that might have been part of the thinking here at DOJ.
Well, but you think about the shame factor here. How many of these guys, you know, think about it, go back 50 years and say, if somebody had said to you, you have to pay billions in fines, would you have had to lower your head at least?
Right.
These guys aren't even lowering their heads. This is a price of doing business.
The stock went up 3%.
The only one who got caught was Bernie Madoff. That was it. He's the only one.
And he wouldn't have.
If
they hadn't, you know, kind of offered it up.
I mean, because his was a Ponzi scheme in some respects, so was this.
Yeah,
you know?
It was a bubble. Yeah. Not a big difference.
Right.
Yeah.
So yesterday, almost the second highest Dow close yesterday?
Yeah.
Over 17?
Yeah, it was over 17.
Over 17.
JP Morgan reported results just today, knocked it out of the park. Citigroup actually, before this, had reported very good results, better than expected. I see that. I see you're pointing out that J.P. Morgan's earnings declined, but they showed increases in profitability across all their sectors, including core commercial loans, and that's kind of a surrogate, you know, for the
and
economy.
And what you said, the Citibank went up.
Yeah, Citigroup went up after the announcement, right? I think they went up 3%
yesterday. Because everybody said, "Okay, good, this is out of the way now."
Yeah, and they showed some improvement again, kind of widely across all their sectors. The banks are very much a surrogate for the economy. Mm-hmm. You know, now you're right. Bank of America is going to get whacked, and you're right, Alan. I think right after that, everybody's going to say, "Great, we got this out of the way." I think that will they
learn anything from this? No,
I think, in the
long run, the greed will take over again.
Yeah, I mean,
my question is there a bubble that's going to burst?
Yeah, that's what I was.
That's the thing. I mean, we went to see our financial planner a couple of months ago, and things were good, 17%.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But that's in socially responsible investing was 17%, and I just wonder, is this going to be maintained or is the bubble going to burst?
Well,
is there something else?
That's why you got 17% because you were adventurous. There are those of us who are old and who are being counseled to be conservative.
Yes.
And so we don't make 17%.
Right.
We make 1%.
Well, we did go a little more aggressive, but it was all socially responsible investments.
Oh, that's so important.
Well,
socially responsible investments?
No, you know what? I'm all in cash.
All in, huh?
Every once in a while, I buy some gold.
You know, I did that. I did that too, Rich. I got yelled at by my wealth advisor, who said you can't do that.
Right. Unless you're
really smart.
You wonder where the bubble is. I mean, Yellen's going to report today, and I think everybody.
Chair Janet Yellen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, and I think everybody's going to say the Fed did a tremendous job. You know, we all keep wondering, you know, when's the other shoe going to drop? How many of these, you know, how much, you know, can you keep interest rates low? But everybody seems to be predicting that there's not going to be a precipitous decline.
Right. And who's the president? That's, you know, and Obama's the president, and he never gets credit for any of this. They keep hawking that he's ruining the economy.
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
So is it because I understand that he's not getting credit, but it also doesn't seem like he's taking credit in the sense of getting up there and beating his chest and saying, look what I did.
But he doesn't do that.
He can't do that because if you recall in the beginning of his administration when the Dow is at 6,000, you know, their talking points were very strong on, you know, we're not about Wall Street. We're not about the rich man's economy. We're about jobs and we're about employment and we're about, you know, wage growth and things like that. And I think from a political standpoint, while jobs are kind of creeping back, you know, you still have a very low labor participation rate, and you have a very low increase in real wage rate.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm with Joe on this one. I think if you can take credit, you take it. And if you said when it was a 6,000, you said, you know,
that was then.
And now you either do it yourself or you have surrogates do it for you. And you know, look, if when the economy grows, whoever's in office gets the credit, and when the economy falls.
Whoever's in office gets the credit.
But we still have, I think most people, I mean, the stock market aside, the stock market is ending high, but we still have problems. There's still,
indeed.
The economy still is in trouble. So there's that, and Rich and I have talked about this a lot in our segments, but I mean, there's a disconnect, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you look out, you know, I go around my town, you know, I live in a little small town and, you know, everybody there has two jobs. You know, the people who work in the diner also drive the school bus. And
two jobs.
Yeah, right. You know, I think the Fed is to be commended in keeping the stock market not only stable, but where it is. I think it gives everybody a lot more confidence just to be able to look at your 401k and your 403b and feel like the world's not coming to an end.
Know. Every time I hear the word Yellen, I begin to salivate.
You do, huh?
Want to know why?
Yes.
Because every day in junior high school, I went to Yellen's Delicatessen around the corner on 92nd Street and Columbus Avenue. Had two specials, sauerkraut, mustard, French fries, and a Pepsi Cola. You know how much?
Oh,
A nickel.
A dollar.
I thought maybe it was about white hair.
That good, the good spicy deli mustard.
It was. I hear Yellen's.
Did you do a Knish?
No.
Oh. You wouldn't eat any of that now.
Don't be so sure.
If the deli is right,
if the deli's
we'll eat.
Right. So we're going to move on and go to news in just a second. But when it comes to the Citigroup thing, do we have any guarantees? Like, will other entities, large corporate entities, learn a lesson from this?
I think they'll learn not to do. They'll do what the financial. You know, I got to say, even somebody as a corporate guy. Banks and financial institutions have proven themselves totally incorrigible when it comes to deregulation. Every time we try and deregulate them, they run off the reservation, and then so we fix that way in which they ran off the reservation, and then they find another way. So
greed is greed. Yeah. And what's going to happen is, and we see it all the time, even if it's not the guys at the top, it's the people they employ who will go crazy. That happens a lot.
I think student loans is going to be the next big talk about bubble.
How does that work?
Well, it's just that they're packaging and selling these student loans.
I see.
Just the way they packaged and sold mortgages.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Sure.
And lots of people are buying them. Lots of people are insuring them.
He's a third party, so
yeah, correct.
Yes, yes.
And the kids won't be able to pay.
The kids won't be able to pay them.
Jobs.
And then what's going to happen when the feds come in and actually say you don't have to pay them? And that whole it's the whole secondary market that causes all the tremors. So.
But did you lose your house that way? In other words, with the mortgage thing, you lost your house.
Right.
You had foreclosures.
Right.
What happens to the kids in
They can't
America?
Take your education away.
Right.
No, but
they can't take your,
no,
your
credit rating.
Your credit rating, right.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. But no, but I think but among the big institutions, they're going to be packaging and selling these, and that could be the next bubble.
So that's that's the next tragedy to watch.
Yes.
Right.
All right. Let's
Great.
Take a break. We'll come back and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. On our panel, of course, WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Political consultant Libby Post, and making his debut on the panel, corporate lawyer from Phillips Lytle, Rich Honan is here. Good morning, all. And we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org, where we get letters like these.
Oh, from Paul. In the U.S. and worldwide, banks are, as a group, a criminal racketeering organization. The position of the U.S. government is, if you cheat your customers, you must give us a cut. The victims tend to get nothing. I remember one news headline some months ago reporting that one prominent bank was fined 3 minutes of profits for defrauding its customers and clients, and that's from Paul in Amherst. And then from someone who I can, did
can,
not
can I can I interrupt yeah. real quick?
Sure.
I just want to remind people that on Friday we'll be broadcasting from Amherst.
We will,
right.
And we love Amherst.
Yes,
well,
we're
we
very excited.
We consider that one of the major goalposts of our
We're
going to
be broadcasting
area.
From the Yiddish Book Center, and Libby's going to be with us, and
right.
we have a wonderful
Yitzhak.
Slate of guests for, that's right, and we're very excited, so I just wanted to mention that while you found the other letter. Go ahead.
Okay, here. Where is the justice in the Citibank settlement? The rich continue to walk away with a slap on the wrist, while the poor continue to be incarcerated for crimes that cannot compare to this thievery. Okay, and...
Yeah, Rich, what about that?
Yeah.
Defend that, Mr. Lawyer.
And Richard says, Rich in Delmar, that is, it's appalling that Eric Holder has not brought criminal charges in this case. I'm sure that Citigroup made a lot more than $7 billion on the fraudulent securities they pushed. The fine should be commensurate with the damage they did to the world economy. And then that's what I got. You got anything else?
No, nope, that's what I got.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to other issues. Two Texas lawmakers say they plan to introduce a bipartisan bill on Tuesday, that would be today, intended to combat the humanitarian crisis at the nation's southern border and make it easier to send migrant children from Central America back to their home countries. According to the New York Times, the legislation is expected to encounter resistance from some congressional Democrats. It comes as the White House has signaled a willingness to work with Republicans to win passage of President Obama's request for $3.7 billion in emergency funds to confront the surge of Central American migrants into the United States, with a heavy concentration of them in Texas.
Well, you know, it's such, I've said it before, but it's such a tough one. immigration's tough to solve. If anybody could project themselves into the president's position and see if they've come up with an answer, I'd be fascinated to hear what you could do. So he's doing his best. But politically, I think what the Obama administration has done is genius. They say, okay, to the Republicans, give us $4 billion to, you know, to solve this thing. And the Republicans are between a rock and a hard place. They don't want to give him the $4 billion because that would make him a winner. And that would mean there's a potential solution. And on the other hand, you know, if they get held responsible, they say, the president would say, well, I asked you for the $4 billion. You didn't give me the $4 billion. Now we got all these people flooding over the borders, and it's your fault. And there is that. Then there's one other thing here, and that is that, you know, the president is being blamed by the Republicans for having, Ray Graff brought this up yesterday in his usual way, for having set this thing up. Because by saying we're going to pass to citizenship, especially for young people, and then everybody says, "Oh, young people, let's send all our young people there," because after all, you know, it's better there than it is here.
You know, I find the language in the lead here that the bill is to combat the humanitarian crisis. The way to combat a humanitarian crisis is to actually help the people that are in trouble. This isn't about the humanitarian crisis. This is about what people consider to be an immigrant crisis and a tipping of the balance crisis of having more people of color or minorities in this country than white people, which if any of these folks come in, become citizens, that surely is going to happen. If they want to combat the humanitarian crisis, they need to put money where their mouths are and really do something about helping the folks that are already in this country, making sure these kids don't go back to total chaos and violence, which is basically what's going to happen, and poverty. I mean, they're going back to abject poverty, and that's not combating a humanitarian crisis.
Okay, so let me just get this straight. What should we do now?
I think we need to take a proactive stance. I think we need to figure out what to do with the people that are already here. Look at what's it going to mean to send these kids back?
No. So would you be for taking everybody who comes across the border and keeping them here?
If we could make life better and put resources where they need to be to integrate them into our country, become citizens, put them to work.
But as we know, that ain't going to happen.
I know. That's
and we know that
happen.
The Republicans, their whole position, and they play very well to the American people, is, you know, there isn't enough for us here.
Right.
Keep them out.
Right.
And don't let them come.
Right.
And, you know, they win the day, you know, on that position. I have immense respect for you, Libby, really. But I think it's a little
ready.
I think it is pie in the sky. I understand what I'm saying is pie in the sky. But to call this the humanitarian crisis there is the squalor in which these folks are living at the moment in these detention centers at the border. That's the crisis. That's not what they want to. What they want to do is send these folks back. So that's an immigration crisis.
Yes, they want to send them
back. That's the issue here. What I'm talking about is the difference in language. You know, if they want to combat a humanitarian crisis, you do something that helps people. What they're saying is just let's get rid of them and send them back.
But isn't it an out for the Obama administration gives to the Republicans by saying, okay, even though it's a misnomer, humanitarian crisis, if you do this and give us the $4 billion, you will be fighting, you know, this humanitarian in quotes crisis, and that allows them some wiggle room.
Yes, probably it does. I just think that, you know, as we move forward in this, and yes, something needs to be done, we need to be cognizant of the fact that we're talking about kids. And we're talking about children who are going to go back to abject poverty. And, you know, the question remains is, why would a parent send their kid alone on this kind of journey? If not to with the hope that the kid would have a better life someplace else.
You know, Libby, I don't know. Why would a parent allow their child to become a suicide bomber in the Middle East? You know, so I think we don't all share the same cultural view of that. I'd also say that it's really hard to address a symptom without addressing the problem. But you still have to address a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think this was an unintended consequence, and I don't think the Republicans think that either. I think this was part of a plan that Obama had right from the beginning, and has Valerie Jarrett written all over it. It's the only thing that really explains the steps. If the first step was, we're going to stop enforcing the immigration laws by however, now I know they define deportations differently. Sure. You know, if you turn them back at the border, that becomes a deportation. But real deportations have dropped from, 800,000 to 200,000. So with that being the first step, and then with the second step, granting amnesty to the under 16s, then with the third step, telling everybody we're going to have a DREAM Act, all you got to do is get here. Those were not unintended.
You think that this is basically a political strategy.
I think it's political. I'll give Obama and his team the benefit of the doubt in that I just think they believe this, similar to what Libby thinks, is that we shouldn't have a border. I'm not going as far as Rick Perry, but I think they think that, look, they're suffering somewhere. Let's bring them in here. I don't think that's terribly practical.
Well, that's the Republican articulation. You have just basically said what they're saying.
Well, then what else explains? What else got us here?
I happen to think, I said it yesterday, I say it again, it's like playing handball. Something happens and you have to know how to control the carom. I don't think so, Rich. I really think that what happens is it's one of the reasons the president has white hair now is that he keeps getting new problems to solve, because that's what the guy at the top has to do. I don't subscribe to the idea that he wanted to let them all in so that he would change the face of America. I just don't.
I don't know what else he could have thought. Well, let me ask you. Let's say you're advising the president. All right. Let's say you're.
Sure.
You're
be happy to do it.
Okay.
Barack.
And the Republicans fire John Boehner and they put me in. And I come in to talk to you. And I say,
that'd be nice.
But also, he's been very good at articulating the Boehner position.
Yeah, right. Yes. Do you cry, though, at a moment's notice? That's what I want to know.
He smokes and cries. He's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
And I said, okay, you asked for your $4 billion. Here's what we'll do. Because, even though Republicans hate old people and children and people in need, we still understand that there's children at the border. And we'll give you that money, even though of the $3.7 billion, $2.2 billion of it is really just meant to enhance these detention centers and not really get to the root cause. But we'll give you all that. We just want the president to get on TV and get on Telemundo and say, the border is not open. Okay, what we said about amnesty, that is not the law of the land.
I think he said all of that. I think he said all of that because
he needs to go further, though, because I don't think he has, but you have to also do it by actions. And, if you read the piece in the Wall Street Journal last Friday, and
consider the source.
Okay, but if you read the piece, it talked about how people say, we have our permission slips, people waving their permission slips, which in fact were the summonses to appear in immigration court. I think when the word gets back that people are being turned back, in as humane a way as possible, it's an odious thing, but there's a limit. What if we came to you and we said, that's what we want? We'll give you the money to fix the humanitarian crisis.
And he's going to say,
But we want you to stop this.
Rich, he's going to say, that's what we're doing. And that's what we want to do. And that's what we're putting out there. You said something. I let it slip by, but I've read to the contrary several times that a lot of the people on the left are furious because our deportations are going up, right, not down. Now, is that just wrong information?
It's what the Obama administration, and I believe, Joe, tell me if I'm wrong here, 2009, early on, changed the definition of deportation. So I always get it reversed. There's removals and returns. And one of them, and I'm not going to say which is which because I always get it. It's like mortgagee and mortgagor. I still don't get that right. I got it wrong on the bar exam. I'll always get it wrong. But it used to be that deportation meant they're here, they're in the country now. They've made it, they're in the country, and now we've undergone a legal process and we're sending them back. The Obama administration changed that to include, in the term of deportation, people basically turned back at the border, which is a large amount of people. But when you and I and, all the people on the conservative side, and I think many people in America think about deportation, I think we think about it in the traditional way of somebody's here, they've gone through a process, we've sent them back. So what the Obama administration has said, yes, we've increased deportations. What they really have done is they're just now counting all the people that get turned back. And again, I can't remember if that's returned.
Well, except that sort of mitigates your basic premise, because if they're turning them back, then they're not welcoming them in. Right?
Yeah, but turned back doesn't mean brought into the United States. I mean, it could be detained and then sent back. In other words, they're not
letting them over the border.
But the numbers haven't changed at all. Okay, what's happened is though they've counted these people that heretofore were not counted.
Okay, we get the premise. But I can tell you that in Great Barrington, I know in little town of Great Barrington, I know at least two or three cases recently in which people a black car comes, pulls somebody who's been here for 14 years into the car, and you don't see them again. So it's not as if they're not doing it; they're doing it.
Well, let me ask you the reverse. What we've at least I only and you guys are more up on current events than me. I didn't know until this recent crisis that what actually happened was the federal authorities would take people and basically repatriate them, you know, in locally without necessarily a lot of input from the local authorities. This Marietta thing, you know, which is awful to see on both sides. I think we can all agree that's just difficult on both sides, but. What do you, the federal government basically giving these, it's really like the mother of all unfunded mandates, isn't it? Take these people and now you take care of them, you know, and we're going to repatriate them to somewhere in upstate New York or something.
Well, I think to some degree, yeah. I think to some degree the millions of dollars, the billions of dollars that Obama's asking for is, you know, it's not, it is humanitarian, to use the earlier Libby word, because you just can't stick them in a sort of Guantanamo-like circumstance. You've got to build something so that at least before these cases come up and the rest of it, they're being housed, they're being fed, and probably being educated to some degree.
Yeah, and I'd come back to, fine, I'll give you the money, but you need to show me two things. One, you need to show me what you're doing to actually stop it. And the trust problem then, look, we already know there's a trust problem between, you know, the Republicans in Congress and the president. But part of the trust problem, if I'm speaking on behalf of the Republicans, is to say, look.
Which you seem to be doing.
Do you really want to do that, though?
Yeah, well, I'll say speaking on behalf of the conservatives, or not speaking on behalf of the Obama administration. The trust problem is we could craft any law we want, and you've shown a willingness, in fact, kind of a gleefulness in saying, whatever the law is, I'm going to use executive orders and my pen and my phone. And how do you, it creates a difficult environment to be able to
Rich,
make legislation.
As Johnny Carson said, buy the premise, buy the gag. The fact of the matter is, I don't buy the premise. Mm-hmm. I think he is sending them back. I think there's all kinds of indications of that, and that he would rather not have this on his hands. So I don't get why, you know, the Republicans are saying, oh, well, we'd give you the money, but we know very well you're going to spend it in the wrong ways, or you've spent it in the wrong ways. I think that's a lot of baloney. And it's a premise that they keep advancing, and some people are buying it because they say it enough.
Yeah, I think the whole idea that, oh, well, no matter what law we pass, he's going to use an executive order to circumvent it, I'd like to see them pass some laws. Because I think that's ultimately what the president would like to see happen, is that there be some bipartisan conversations compromise, and they come and pass a law so that the president doesn't have to use executive orders because Congress isn't doing anything.
Yeah, but the ship, look, you're right, but the ship is sailed. Now, maybe I will say, for example, everybody's leaning on this 2008, the Wilberforce Act or whatever, the law that makes it more difficult to return children coming from...
Mm-hmm. For trafficking, sex trafficking.
Which I think was passed like by voice vote, you know, and everybody agreed, and we all agree. Okay, now the problem is that we now have a situation that wasn't really contemplated.
The Wilberforce Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act of 2008.
Yeah, that was before they had the good, you know, kind of politically correct taglines for, you know, like No Child Left Behind or something. But I think
all the children are being left behind.
Yeah, exactly,
with this
right.
One.
If, for example, if that's the law that is actually, you know, one of the issues here, you know, we all agree we want to stop trafficking, but now we have a kind of different situation. You would think that in a bipartisan way, and by the way, in a way that costs not very much money, they could probably, you know, create an exemption to
Do
that.
Do you really think that the Republicans are interested in anything bipartisan?
Right. That's the thing. They will refuse to sit down at the table.
No,
they just refuse.
Look, you know.
No, I think. Yeah. I mean, first, this is the first conversation, you know, we've had on this issue. You know, in other words, the crisis arose. Now, you got to remember what you're dealing with, Alan. The Republicans very much think, and I think a lot of people very much think, that this was not a crisis of their making, okay? Now, I understand
that... they didn't have it in the Bush administration?
They did.
Yeah.
They did. But the laws were being enforced, and the amount of people coming in was far less. I mean, the last time we did amnesty, was it 86 or 96? I think there were... whenever was the last time it was 3.5 million people. Now we're up to 12 million, again 50,000. You know, new ones. It's just, I think that there are people who want to get things done, particularly if for no other reason. You know, conservatives are really good at doing the right thing. We'll do the right thing for the wrong reasons, and we'll do the right thing if it helps politically. You know, I think there's a willingness to do that.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up our conversation and, you know...
I disagree.
Take a temperature of the room. Okay, you can disagree, and you'll have time to disagree. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC is from New York Pain Management, offering pain management for chronic pain and spine care in a private office setting with Drs. Charles Gordon and Quentin Fung. Be set free, nypainfree.com. Albany Marriott with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. And the Olana Partnership, presenting the Olana Landscape Trilogy, a series of oil painting workshops utilizing views from Olana. Tuesday, August 5th through Thursday, August 7th, olana.org.
About 2.5 minutes left. I want to give Alan his say because he disagrees.
I disagree, but I forgot what I disagree with.
No, you don't.
Oh, come on.
Okay. So here's what: the Republicans aren't doing what is in their own interest, in my opinion. We now have a country that is going to have a huge Hispanic population. Some people think that people of color will soon be the majority in the country, of the whole country. So you would think that they would play to women. You would think they would play to Hispanics, who hate the idea that they're being put down, you know, by people who are saying you're all a bunch of losers, we should send you back where we came from. They hate it, and they're voting in huge numbers for the Democrats. So, Rich, I think they're never going to do what's, quote, politically good for them, because they just haven't got the cojones to do that. They just don't have the wisdom to do that. I don't see any evidence of it at all.
They're stuck. They're just stuck, and they don't want to change.
Well, I think that, first of all, I do give them the benefit. I give everybody the benefit of the doubt for, at the end of the day, trying to do, you know, whatever they believe the right thing is. But I think you need to be cognizant that if they truly believe that our immigration system is not being handled correctly, and they don't have any confidence, which, by the way, is a well-justified fear that the laws are going to be carried out. How could you go ahead and then fix those laws?
I think the notion that it's a well-justified fear that the laws aren't going to be carried out is a product of reading too much of the Wall Street Journal and listening to Fox News a little too much.
All right.
I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know,
we're out of time.
About.
We're out of time.
Okay,
right.
Fine.
Okay.
Never mind. Bye, guys.
I'll go read Mother Jones.
Can Rich come back?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
And then we'll do this again. Excellent. Thank you all, Rich. Great to have you aboard. Libby,
thank you.
Alan, always a pleasure. We'll
thank
be back. Roundtable at WAMC.org.